Support comes from the Arizona Inn, a Four Diamond, family-owned historic resort hotel and restaurant on Elm Street near the U of A. Information is at arizonainn.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tucson Weekly Executive Editor Jim Ninsel, and we're here to talk Zona politics. My guest today is Sammy Hamed. He is a candidate for District or Ward 1 in the city of Tucson. It's the west side seat that's being opened with the retirement of Rahina Romero, the current councilwoman who is now running for mayor. Maybe I shouldn't say she's retiring, but she's definitely stepping down from the Ward 1 seat in order to pursue this mayoral seat. In this race with Sammy is Lane Santa Cruz, who is a former Ward 1 aide, local rabble-rouser Miguel Ortega, former aide Sammy, who is a former aide to Congressman Raul Grijalva, and a fellow named Rob Elias, who's the director of marketing at the Tucson Botanical Gardens. And Sammy, I know who you are. I've known you for years, but a lot of people may not know who you are, which is the whole idea of campaigning. So who is Sammy Hamed, and why is he running for the Tucson City Council?
Hey, Jim, thanks for having me on this afternoon. I really appreciate it. I'm a Democrat candidate. I live in the Menlo Park neighborhood, and I'm running for city council because I want to work to bring back the services and things that are needed to make Ward 1 what it needs. So, Jim, I'm not going to be a voice for the residents because the residents have their own voices in Ward 1. I'm going to be a council member who listens to them and learns from them so I can make the most informed decisions, but also to help respond to their requests for assistance when they need help when it comes to constituent services. Because, Jim, a job like a council member, there's two key parts of the job. Is one is to respond to constituents' requests and needs, and two, to represent them as best as possible on the city council. I think I can do that well because, like you talked about, I worked as an aide for Congressman Raul Grijalva here in Tucson, where I did a lot of mostly constituent casework and help people out. And I can bring those skills to the city council Ward 1 office, as well as be a good listener, because, like I said, part of the job is listening and learning. And being that I'm a partially blind guy myself, you know, I'm a better listener than I am a person who can see. I'll put it that way.
You did mention that you're partially blind. You do have this disability. And talk a little bit about who you are and what you've your path into politics.
Sure, I could do it. Well, I could tell you this, Jim. I sure as hell didn't see my path. I'll put it that way. I think someone guided me along the way a little bit, if you will. But regarding my disability, of course, you know, born legally blind, went to school at the Arizona School of Fin Deaf and Blind, graduated from there, went to U of A and Pima College, where I majored in political science, and also studied with a minor in Spanish, if you will. And I worked for Congressman Grijalva for 8 years as a constituent service caseworker aide, as well as worked at Pima County in their Office of Emergency Management, where I helped worked on the writing of emergency operations plans. And for the last 3.5 years, I work at Savvy Services for the Blind, which is a nonprofit training center for blind people who are learning the skills to be independent and confident people, productive in our society again, because we believe that even though we lack the vision and we have blindness, we can be just as productive and independent, but also be integrated within the community as well to do the things that anyone else does, as well as live our normal lives. But Jim, regarding that is, I've been involved in the community, doing things like having served on the city's transit task force to help make sure our bus system runs efficiently as possible and to make sure it's accessible for all people from all walks of life to get them to where they want to go, as well as having served on the board of the Arizona School for Deaf and Blind when I was appointed by Janet Napolitano when she was governor, as well as I served on the board of the Arizona Center for Disability Law, which is a nonprofit organization law firm that helps to make systemic changes within the justice system, if you will. And I think I can bring those aspects of my community service to the Ward 1 Council office, as well as the City Hall.
And you have mentioned earlier that you want to listen to what folks are talking to you and take their concerns to the city council. And you must be out campaigning and talking with people now. What is really on the mind of the Ward 1 voters out there. And we should say the four of you, the four candidates in this Democratic primary that's going to be held in late August, are really competing for a relatively small number of votes. Just the Democrats and whatever independents roll into that primary over there in the West Side Ward 1. So you're really fighting for a small chunk of Tucson, at least in the primary race. But talk about what folks are saying to you as you knock on doors.
Knocking on doors, what I hear is a few things. I hear, Jim, is people tell me the first thing I hear is they want a council member who responds to them. They don't want to feel ignored, and they felt ignored for many, many years, and they're frustrated and mad about that. They don't want that, and they want someone who actually does the opposite, listens to them, and hears what they have to say. One. Two, they want a council member that'll work to get things fixed. And the biggest complaint I hear that they want fixed in Ward 1, their roads. I'm not talking about our main arterial roads, but I'm talking about our smaller side streets, neighborhood streets, which haven't been repaired or serviced at all in many, many years. And that is complaint number one I hear from them. Number two, I also hear a lot about is ironically interesting about the polls, the public polls. A lot of them want them open again, if not more than just 2 months a year, but even longer, 6 months, even if possible, year round. And that's one thing they want because it's good for them as well as kids, neighborhood kids from all parts of life. And they want that. And, you know, Jim, I've walked around a lot of the neighborhoods here on Ward 1 on the west side and the south side. And like I said, number one is they want to be heard and be heard and addressed, if you will. And that's key, basically, in this case, because as a council member, my job, like I said, would be just to respond and work with them, but also go to their neighborhood association meetings, which I already do now as a candidate, and listen to them. I'm not there to speak. I'm not there to take over their time at their meeting. I'm just there to sit, listen, and learn about their concerns, and I can address them as time goes on, if elected. And in such a crowded affair, Jim, like this, like you talked about, I think I bring a different voice to perspective. Like I tell people, I'm probably the only guy in the race that has one eye. So that makes me stand out apart from them, but also that I've been involved in the community for many years and that I've never stopped, nor will I stop, regardless of the outcome of this race. But of course, if I win, of course, it'll be at a completely different level as a council member for Ward 1. And not just that, Jim, but if I'm elected, I tell people I will give up my job at Savvy full time to work full time as a council member. I'll dedicate all my time to that, as well as hire the best staff to represent and work with the people of Ward 1 in this neighborhood.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Zone of Politics with Jim Nintzel. I'm your host, Jim Nintzel. And we are talking with Sammy Hamed, who is running in the Ward 1 Democratic primary for the Tucson City Council this year. And you mentioned folks are talking about roads a lot. Not an unusual complaint. I certainly hear it as well. And the city of Tucson has managed to pass a bond issue, I think, about 6 years ago that allowed them to do some major road repair work on some of our arterial roads. They've since passed a sales tax that's dedicated to both transportation and helping public safety with some of its capital needs with fire trucks and police cars and whatnot. So we are seeing some roads repaired within the city limits. As a council member, is there a way you think that should be accelerated? Is there money in the city budget to accelerate that? Or should the city kind of continue down the path it's on now with the money it's receiving and the work that it's doing?
Well, I think we're doing okay. As you know, we got a schedule, Jim, regarding the road repair. Of course, it's been going on for 2 years when Prop 101 was passed to increase the sales tax for, like you said, roads and public safety, and it goes till 2022. To accelerate it, yeah, I think we could do it. It's all about priorities, Jim. We as a council have to make priorities, and of course, one of them is roads. Roads, like as we know under the city charter, actually. And that, it's going to take a lot. It takes a tough vote to make it done, but I'm willing to cast that tough vote to make it a priority to fix our roads here in Tucson, actually. So we're doing good, like I said, on the arterial, but I think it's time to dedicate and prioritize money for the neighborhood streets in the interim. Well, as time goes on, Jim, like in 2026, when RTA2 comes up for a vote, and I think it's time we do have to put a road maintenance, road repair component into that next plan, which should include some money for neighborhood streets.
And that vote could actually come up a lot sooner. I think we had some enabling legislation at the legislature this last year, and it does allow the RTA to reprioritize how it spends its money, whether right now I think it's under the heading of basically of enhancing our corridors and our capacity, and this allows for maintenance if that's what comes out, and we'll see what kind of plan is developed over the next few years and how soon they do take that back to voters. But you also mentioned that you had worked on transit issues with the city. And I'm wondering, so in terms of how much the bus riders pay versus how much the city general fund puts in, and of course there's also money beyond the general fund, there's federal funding that comes down, but there have been complaints at times that the fares are too low and that the city is paying too much out of the general fund towards the buses. Your sense at this point in terms of where that fare recovery is, you know, they talk about trying to hit a 25% window there and try to recover 25% of the costs of running the bus system through the fare box. But your sense of where both the city's funding of the bus system is and whether that should be higher, and also where the bus fares are.
Well, first of all, Jim, I'm a transit user, so I use SunTran and even the streetcar at times a lot. I live near the streetcar in the Menlo Park neighborhood I live in. Yeah, I remember when I was on the transit task force, we did put a goal in of 25% fare recovery, and I know council adopted that a few years ago. And 2016 was the last time mayor and council raised the fares, but they did it over a two-year cycle, so they went up in 2016 and 2017. I think at this time, we don't need to raise the fares. I think we're fine. I think we're trying to meet that goal, if get there, if not, and that we're charging enough to make the system run. Regarding the amount of money, I think we're spending a good amount of money to provide the frequent transit service network that the city is trying to put in place as well. And Jim, it's like I tell people on the campaign trail and groups, we don't need to spend any more money on frequency for our transit system. We're starting to do a pretty good job of that. We need to put more, not money, but more of the redirection of ensuring that our transit system goes to places that are not currently going to right now and being reached. So what I'm saying is certain routes should be extended just a little longer in terms of their distance, but not in terms of their time frequency. And I think that's what we got to work on now as a city, actually, on that.
And there is the potential of an initiative on the ballot that would declare Tucson a sanctuary city, essentially. It's the Families Free and Together proposal that we'll see if the backers manage to get that onto the ballot. I suspect they're probably going to gather enough signatures, whether there'll be some other legal obstacles or whether those signatures will all be good or not. We will see. But this has been something that the current council members have said is unnecessary. Your thoughts on this particular proposal?
Well, obviously, the council said it's unnecessary, and I've heard since I've been a candidate that there's this welcoming immigrant ordinance we have on the books, if you will, and that obviously doesn't go far enough in the eyes of the group that's pushing the sanctuary initiative, if you will, and so they're obviously taking it to the voters, obviously, which they have the right to do, actually, and I think that's fine. That, you know, if the voters want to put it on the ballot, let it be on the ballot, and let's see what happens there, if you will, on that. And we could see what happens on that. But I support their right to bring it to the ballot and if they can get the number of signatures required to put it there and put it to a vote in November.
And would you be a yes vote or a no vote on this one?
I'm sure vote, actually, at this moment, because I haven't had a chance to read the initiative yet and read their points of view on it. And I'll read to it soon, actually. I'll get to it pretty soon. I can tell you that right now, very shortly. I'll get to it in the next week or so. So I'm not sure on it yet, actually. You know, I'm still trying to do some more research on it and things like that. And see what's out there and see what's done on that.
Let me ask you about the Broadway widening that's coming up. This is probably more Wards 6 and 5 than Ward 1, but it's certainly something that folks in the community have some strong feelings about. The council did vote to move forward with this. It's only going to be a 6-lane road instead of the 8-lane road that was originally envisioned. But your thoughts on whether this was a good decision by the council to move forward with widening Broadway between downtown and Country Club Road, and your thoughts on whether this was the right idea to push forward with? And whether, if you did think it was the right idea, or even if you didn't, do you think the city's going about it the right way in terms of being sensitive to the businesses that exist on the street and how they're kind of developing and laying out the plan for this stretch of roadway?
Regarding Broadway, you know, the Broadway plan, I'm aware of it for a long time. I sit on the RTA's Citizens Advisory Committee regarding the RTA plan. So I've been on there since 2011, so I'm pretty intimately familiar with it, how it works. But regarding Broadway, first and foremost, the voters put in the plan. So it was ultimately the voters had the first and the last word on whether they wanted to widen Broadway. Did Broadway need to be widened? Yes, it did. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. However, the plan they went about it, I don't know if a 30-year-old plan, 30-year-plus plan, was the right answer on the widening of Broadway, because places and things change over time. Circumstances change, and I don't think that was the way to do it, actually. So such an ancient plan that we're using for the Broadway widening. Regarding the displacement of businesses, obviously, it's involuntary, obviously, and it's hurtful, and we're getting rid of a lot of historical structures as well, and I think it could be better handled, actually, if anything. And I think the voices should be taken into consideration as well as the residents. And if anything, if enough residents were to make enough noise or even get a reconsideration done, I would be open to reconsidering aspects of the Broadway plan, even the widening of it a little bit, you know. I can tell you right now, my problem with it is, Jim, is not just the displacement aspect, but also the lanes. There's no dedicated transit lane to Broadway for as part of the widening, and there should be some form of a dedicated transit lane for it. And there isn't. And that's one problem I'd have, because I think they should dedicate a transit lane on each side of Broadway for this. Actually, that would help, since the route number 8, which goes down Broadway, is a very heavily traveled route throughout the city and the transit system.
And let me shift gears a little bit over to away from transportation and over to public safety. I do hear complaints from people that there aren't enough police officers in the city of Tucson, and we need to be paying the police more. They're leaving town, and also we need to find more money in the budget to have more police officers in the city of Tucson. I'm wondering about your thoughts about our public safety staffing at this point.
You know, Jim, I think we're down to about 800 officers, if I'm correct, if my memory serves me correct on that. We were more than that not that long ago. I know our staffing numbers are way below down. They're like maybe 20 years behind staffing level wise, you know, from like 96, 97 levels, maybe even a little bit less than 800 we are. As the city grows population wise, we need to try to keep up with that. Yeah, we need to do that because we need to have the staffing levels that are commensurate with a city of our size, actually, because the better we have staffing, the better response we can have to the quality of life issues that occur that require police assistance, if you will. And that we're going to have to look at, you know, our budget. I know the council has done a pretty decent job of doing that regarding the funding level for the police department. But we could do more than that because, as you know, at times when we had the high staffing levels, that money was a complement of the federal government, the federal cops grants back in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s. And those have obviously came and went, as you know, and that we have to do it through our general fund, which, of course, is made up through the sales tax, of course, as you know, which is our main revenue source in the city of Tucson. As well as with the fire department, Jim, you know, when the city grows, they weren't growing the fire department ranks, the number of firefighters and engines and trucks needed to respond to a city of our size. And that's not good, actually, of course, you know, when it comes, like I said as well, you know, quality of life there when people need public safety assistance, police or fire. And that we need to do the same thing as well and make that tough decision as well and prioritize that we're going to put the money in for firefighters and police in those positions to ensure that for a city of our size.
I want to shift gears again and talk a little bit about downtown development and West Side redevelopment. And, you know, we've seen a lot going on in the downtown area. And, of course, the streetcar now stretches over across the Santa Cruz and wraps up over there at the Mercado. And there have been, I think, concerns among some residents on the West Side that there's a lot of gentrification going on, and they're concerned that you know, they may be priced out of their homes, or their children may be priced out of the neighborhood, or what have you. And I wonder what your thoughts are in terms of, you know, these worries about gentrification.
You know, Jim, I live in Menlo Park that you're talking about, where the Mercado ends there at the where the streetcar at the Mercado ends, excuse me, or they're in the Menlo Park neighborhood. And gentrification has occurred already. You know, it's taken its impact on Menlo Park now. Menlo Park has totally, completely changed. It's a complete opposite of what it was before. And some people were involuntarily pushed out of their homes because of the rising prices and rising property taxes. And it's sad to see, in a way, some people who started their homes 30, 40, 50 plus years ago, you know, built them from the ground up or got them right when they were built, can't afford them anymore. I think my way to handle gentrification would be, of course, is for the people who've been there a long time owners, 30, 40, 50 years, who, you know, are on fixed incomes, elderly people, whether it's their Social Security or their fixed pensions, would be to offer them a complete city property tax abatement, a complete abatement of their city property taxes, I would do. Now, I know, of course, there's the state property tax reduction, of course, which is they reduce it up to a third, I think, of their taxes because of the age of their home and things like that. But I would do this for certain areas and certain in areas like that, neighborhoods, to try to stop this gentrification, of course. And that's how I would handle it, in my opinion.
And let's talk a little bit about economic development. I think we've seen more jobs coming to Tucson recently with some organizations like Caterpillar coming here. We've got Amazon coming to town. We have had a few wins on the economic development front in terms of luring major employers here, but and Raytheon expansion recently as well. But talk a little bit about what you think needs to happen on the economic development front for the city of Tucson to help folks get better paying and better benefits and just better jobs.
On the economic development front, yeah, we have done a good job. You know, like you said, the two most major employers that came in, Caterpillar and Amazon, they're both in Ward 1, actually. They're both placing their locations, actually. And that's great to see, actually, to see that there. But when it comes to economic development, of course, you know, we as a city tend to give various incentives, whether it's giblets or other downtown incentives and things like that, or other forms of tax abatement and things. I think that's fine. But I think, Jim, we're at a point now where we should be able to attract them without having to give them the incentives. If there are incentives, it should be things like better streets, clean parks, safety, good schools and things like that. Those should be the attracting qualities to get them to want to come, as well as a good trained workforce and working with, you know, partnering up with the school districts and Pima College and University of Arizona to have those trained workers. Because if we can do that and keep those workers here, then guess what? We're the right city to bring those jobs into Tucson. That'll help our economy and prop it up more.
You know, Tucson is a city that has fairly low arts funding per capita. In terms of what we do in terms of supporting the arts through the Arts Foundation of Southern Arizona and other organizations. But my question is what are your thoughts on should we have more funding for the arts in Tucson? And if so, how would you go about finding that dollar?
We do a pretty good job on the arts funding, actually. I think we do a good job. We're a pretty culturally rich and diverse city, especially art-wise when I say that, actually. And that Tucson's beauty is being shown through the arts, the public art projects and things like that we have, actually. And I'd be open to that. I'd be open to looking at when we do public works projects and things like that, or big projects, that we dedicate a certain percentage, if we're not doing that now, but maybe even 1 or 2%, some percentage, if you will, to art funding. Actually, I think we need to do that, keep doing that. I know we did that when we passed the RTA plan. There was an art component. I forgot what the percentage was, but there was a small art, public art component for things like, you know, bridges, roads, streetcar stops, things like that, where there had to be a public art aspect to it. I think that's great. I think that we could do that as a city, actually. We need to keep doing that.
And we are just about out of time here. I got about 2 minutes left, but are there anything you want to talk about with your campaign that we haven't discussed yet here on Zona Politics?
Sure. Jim, of course, we talked about jobs. We talked about transportation. I want to talk about was one thing is public safety. I never covered it, but one aspect of public safety that's always covered in not covered, I should say, excuse me, is pedestrian safety. You know, I work here at Grant and Avernon here at Savvy Services for the Blind. A lot of pedestrian fatalities at that intersection. I know that since the beginning of the year, I think there's been 13 fatalities in the city of Tucson. I think two or three have happened at the Grant and Alvernon intersection. We need to work on that, on pedestrian safety issue, because pedestrian safety, Jim, is a public safety issue. We need to do that, whether it's better education of our drivers, better education of our pedestrians, things like that we need to do. And that's one that will be one of my priorities as well as working on. I would be doing. And if people want to learn more about my campaign, they can go to my website, sammyhamed.com. That is S as in Sammy, A, M as in Mark, I, H as in Harold, A, M as in Mark, E for Edward, and D for dog.com.
All right. Sammy Hamed, running for the Tucson City Council in Ward 1. Sammy, best of luck with the campaign. Thank you for joining us here on Zone of Politics today. We are out of time. I'm Jim Nintzel. I'm your host, and I want to thank you for tuning in, and we'll have more next week, so tune in again.
Zone of Politics is made possible with the generous support of The Loft Cinema, Tucson's independent movie theater. The Loft features independent, foreign, and documentary films, cult classics, discussions with filmmakers, and much more, including the Loft Film Fest in November. The Loft is located at 3233 East Speedway Boulevard. Showtimes can be found at loftcinema.org. Support for Zone of Politics is provided by Hotel Congress in historic downtown Tucson. Hotel Congress is known for its world-famous taproom, Cup Cafe, and Club Congress, offering local and national acts inside and outside on the plaza. More information at hotelcongress.com and 622-8848.